The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, good morning. A very, very difficult day, and a day that we will all remember as the day that the war started in Europe, Russia invading Ukraine. From an Israel perspective, this is a very challenging time.
It is indeed, Boker Tov to everyone. Sad day, to be honest, because war seems to be the last resort that we wish to reach. And yet it seems on the face of things that it really all alternative avenues haven't really been properly exhausted, and this may well be an opportunistic action rather than one of a last resort. Of course, Israel unfortunately knows only too well the results of aggression, of war, of conflict, and it's not something that we would choose to get involved in. And of course, as I said yesterday, Israel finds itself in an enormously difficult position with regard to supporting or not supporting the sides on each end of this particular conflict. I think that Israel would very much like to support the Ukraine, I think has a very close relationship with the Ukraine, and the Ukrainian government has interests which it would like to protect with regard to its relationship with the Ukraine. And I think that also Israel just immorally sees no reason why Russia would find it necessary to invade a sovereign state. That concept seems to be a little alien and not well supported by the Israeli government. But of course, as you mentioned earlier, a very sensitive situation with Russia, given the Russian presence on the Syrian border. Defense Minister Yair Lapid has said Israel effectively has a border with Russia. That's the way that this is considered, because of the Russian presence in southern Syria. And as you mentioned, the fact that the Russian presence does to some degree limit the involvement and the presence of the Iranians in southern Syria. We saw again last night another report coming out of Syria where Israel is reported to have carried out airstrikes, this time towards targets nearer to Damascus. So this is an ongoing conflict issue which Russia is very much part of. And to stand up now and publicly condemn Russia for these very belligerent, very aggressive actions that it's taking against Ukraine would also not serve Israel's purposes and interests very well. So Israel caught between a rock and a hard place, where this is all concerned, not wanting to criticize either party, and in fact wanting to really support the Ukraine as much as possible in its right to defend its sovereignty. But of course, Israel still staying silent, at least for now, until we see how things develop later on. But clearly a very, very worrying development in Eastern Europe. And Israel will certainly be watching carefully, not only because of its interests, but of course because of those Israelis who are still in the Ukraine and could potentially be in danger.
A lot of cynicism from our listeners, not unreasonably so. Gimple says the UN announced today that now that Russia has invaded Ukraine, it'll impose strict sanctions on Israel. Madeleine says, don't worry, the war will be blamed on Israel somehow. Justin says, how this is the 1st of September 1939 all over again. Thank you, Justin. And the history of the Ukraine during the war. Yeah, it is a very, very sad situation, because we know what follows and we know the number of lives that will be lost. As
Unfortunately so. And I think that when I said it's opportunistic, I think that Russian President Putin has assessed things very astutely. And he has decided that this is his opportunity to make a statement at a time when the world isn't ready to respond to it as strongly as it might have responded under different circumstances. With President Joe Biden in office and the way that he has chosen to run things, and the call that the Russian president has made, thinking that the US is highly unlikely to want to get involved on the ground, looking at the situation in Europe, in the UK, with a prime minister who's beleaguered through various other issues that he's having to deal with, and also unlikely to put boots on the ground in order to defend the Ukraine, with the German chancellor just being new in his post, looking at the French president to see how he might assess things, when looking at the world's strongest powers and trying to work out how they might respond to such a situation, also looking at NATO and trying to decide how NATO might respond, I think that the Russian president has decided that this is really his opportunity to do things without the other countries. I mean, people are going to be saying a lot and they will be implementing sanctions all over the place, but physically on the ground, it's highly unlikely that foreign nations are going to get involved. And as we've seen before, I know that there are a lot of comparisons with the start of World War II, but as we saw then and as we see now, foreign countries don't really want to risk their troops and get involved in wars which are taking place on other people's territory. It's just one of those things which is a very difficult decision to make, to think about your troops going over there to protect their rights, to protect their country, to protect the world, to protect something which is not your own sovereign territory, and risking your troops and risking taxpayers' money that will be involved is a very tough decision to make. It's always much easier when it's on home territory, and that's one of the things that Israel has found, is that, you know, protecting southern Israel against attacks from Gaza and protecting northern Israel against attacks from Lebanon and securing the borders. And those are very easy decisions to make because they're being fought in your back garden. And so therefore, this is a matter of life and death. It's a matter of your own existence and your own survival. But when it becomes a war in the Ukraine, all those miles away, with somebody else at risk and somebody else's issues to deal with, then people become very reluctant to get involved.
Absolutely right. A serious question from Gimple. Do you think this would have happened with Trump in power? I think it would not have. And not, I mean, part of the reason is because who knows what Trump could have done. You just can't predict it. And I think maybe that's why.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
I think that's exactly right. I mean, and that's my reference to the opportunism here, because there's a certain predictability about the leaders who are in power at the moment as to how they won't react. Whereas I think you're absolutely right, and I 100% agree with you, that Trump's reaction was one of those things that was unpredictable. And unpredictability in these situations is always undesirable and very difficult to manage.
Absolutely. The path appears to be clear for Israel's COVID state of emergency to be lifted. That's very good news.
This is great news, and it's interesting that the government met yesterday to decide that the state of emergency, which has been in place now for the best part of 2 years, will be lifted. So it doesn't mean that Israel won't continue to take action against potential pandemic-related matters, but the way in which the government will be allowed to operate moving forward will change. And the reason that is that these powers under the state of emergency allowed the government to take decisions and to implement certain provisions and restrictions without the need to go through the regular legislative process, without the need to get Knesset approval. And up until now, the approval that's been given to the government has been done retrospectively. So decisions have been made and decisions have been implemented with then a approval coming from the Knesset Constitution, Law and Justice Committee, but retroactively, just to verify and ratify decisions and actions that have already been taken. Going forward, from the 1st of March, which is next week, that's all going to change. The state of emergency will be lifted, which means that these special powers will be done away with, and that the regular legislative process will be back in play, which means Knesset approval for any significant restrictions that the government wishes to implement. And interestingly enough, this particular lifting of the state of emergency has been also approved by the health ministry, which has been the one kind of sticking point when the government have wanted to lift restrictions and wanted to loosen things up in order to allow the regular economy to flow a little bit more. The Ministry of Health has been the one that has been the sticking point. They've wanted to be a little bit more conservative and try to keep restrictions in place as much as possible. But now all of that seems to have been agreed upon almost unanimously across the board, that we will then from the 1st of March need to go through a full legislative process. I can see that there will still be restrictions in place. I can see that there will still be matters that will need to be dealt with, but they will obviously be dealt with differently. And another related story that I saw was one which talks about morbidity rates, about the number of people who've died year on year. And what was interesting for me is that during the years until 2018, for the effectively the 10-year period up until then, the number of people who died each year dropped. Year on year, there was quite a significant reduction. From 2000 to 2019, the average mortality rate dropped almost 30% over that 20-year period. The number of people who were dying each year was less in 2019 than it was in 2020 by a factor of, sorry, by then 2019 to 2000 by a factor of 30%. All of a sudden, come around 2020, and we see a year-on-year rise of something like 3 to 4%, and something similar, even more than that, in 2021. So there can be little doubt that this particular pandemic has had a massive impact on the mortality rate in Israel, potentially even more so than what we've seen in other countries around the world. I think the average mortality rate in other countries was slightly lower than the increase in the mortality rate in Israel. So those people have said, this is just a flu, get over it, flu kills people all the time. Well, all of that is true, but here the numbers are unequivocal in demonstrating that this particular pandemic has been something quite real. And also, you know, I get back to the same thing all the time, that the vaccination has been the main issue, the main difference between continuing down that path of increased mortality and not increasing down the path of mortality. So these are statistics now that we can reach into, which we didn't have the benefit of at the start of the pandemic. But this all goes to show that this has been a very, very serious time, not only in terms of lockdowns and economic issues and so on, but all of those responses have had some basis and some justification to them.
Yeah, it's at least good news, moving in the right direction. The Tinder swindler has come out of his shadow and broken his silence.
Yeah, have you guys been watching this on Netflix?
I guess so. Well, everybody has. The truth is, I actually haven't, for whatever reason. But pretty much everybody I know has watched The Tinder Swindler, and have been completely shocked and outraged by it. I was trying to follow to see how the link, you know, how established the link to him being an Israeli was, you know, on social media. You see some comments, but not that many. South Africans haven't really cared about the fact that he was born in Israel.
Well, he was, and I thought that I personally haven't seen it either, but maybe I will. I mean, it seems like some sort of light entertainment, and also very, I think they would call it in Yiddish, a bittere Gelächter. It's sort of funny, but very, very sad at the same time. The man who was called Simon Levayev, but who actually was born under a different name. And the story goes that he took on the Levayev name. He was actually born Shimon Chayut, and he actually changed his legal name. And as I understand it, the story, at least in the Netflix show, suggests that he changed his name to Levayev in order to present himself as the son of an Israeli billionaire, Lev Levayev, who was involved with diamond dealing and who was a fairly well-known character, because Shimon wanted to present himself as something of a millionaire, billionaire, playboy type in order to dupe people into giving him money. I don't know how the two things really match up. If you present yourself as a mega wealthy individual, why would people want to give you money? I don't know how all of that really fits together, but you guys who've watched it on Netflix will obviously know all of this a little bit better than I do. Perhaps it's just the gullibility of people, perhaps the desire that people have to want to help other people that he took advantage of. But he's come out of the shadows saying that he has been very much misrepresented, that this has really dragged his name through the mud in an unjustified way. He said that he wants to try to clear his name and to tell the world that it is not true. Those were his words. And interestingly enough, he now has a girlfriend who has come out in his defense as well. And she is an Israeli model, and not some ordinary person who seems to be another gullible person who's taking advantage of. She claims that she hasn't given him any money, and she claims that she doesn't understand how all of these accusations could have been leveled against him. How can people build such fake stories? Were the words that she used when talking about Shimon Levayev, as he's known now. So I really don't know. He's come out. I mean, I would have thought that he would want to lay low and kind of try and disappear somewhere. Mm. But no, he's coming out and he's defending himself, and he's claiming that all of this is not legitimate comment about him. And then when asked how he became so wealthy, because he claims that he was misrepresented and that, you know, all of these accusations about him just making things up are untrue. And he claims that he bought Bitcoin back in 2011 when it was worth very little. And everybody knows what it's worth now. And apparently that's how he made his money. So, again, questions for me. Why did he choose the name Levayev? What's significant about that?
Because he's a sociopath. There is no doubt, without having watched it, I've watched some of his interviews, I've read up on it, the guy is a sociopath. There is absolutely no doubt about it. He's moving on to his next con, which is basically all of us, as he gets a Hollywood agent and becomes famous for the sake of being famous, and will continue in the same way.
His 10 minutes of fame, you know, I think this is what it is. I think perhaps, you know, he's speaking out and trying to defend himself and claiming that this Netflix show has done him so much harm is potentially exactly the opposite. Loves being in the limelight, absolutely. Loves being in the media, loves all the attention, even if it might not be the most positive attention, not the sort of attention that others amongst us would necessarily choose. But, once his name is out there, then it's out there for better and for worse. Yeah, very fascinating story, this, and maybe a reason for me to watch the Netflix show.
Absolutely, Anthony Reich. Thank you. As always, it is 8 o'clock. Wishing you a fantastic weekend, a Shabbat Shalom, and we'll catch you 7:45 on Monday morning.